Hello everyone and welcome to JFG Tonight, second start again, a no sound problem. I will try to spare my voice tonight by trying to speak slowly and softly, because despite 2 days of vacation, my voice has not fully recovered. I will have to inform the Crucible that perhaps we should schedule the debate in at least a week from now, because you see the state of my voice. It's not perfect yet, although I'm feeling better than 2 days ago. So I think I'll be able to deliver the profile of the Uvalde shooter just with a weaker voice. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? There's been much talk during my vacations about this shooting. People are frustrated. Parents are frustrated at the attitude of the police, because the police took a lot of time to intervene in this situation and treated the situation as a kind of barricaded hostage taking, when in fact it was a shooter. And I'm not sure that I'm fully critical of the police here. I think there definitely has been a misapprehension of the correct tactic. But I'm not sure it has resulted in the death of people or children. I'm still not confirmed about this, because for so much that is said on social media about how they took 40 minutes from the time they were there to their first confrontation of the shooter, no one asked the question, how many people have died due to this? Because on the one hand, you have the police not very certain about it either, because what they say is, most of the shootings have been heard at the beginning. So hundreds of rounds have been shot at the beginning. And then the shootings were only sporadic. What does that mean? Shootings were sporadic. Does that mean that he was still killing people that he hadn't fully found? Maybe they were hiding under a table or something. In fact, we have the story of children who were hiding. One was hiding at least under the table. One apparently was told, please scream help if you need help, and they screamed help and got shot. And another child that used the blood of her friend who had just died in front of her to cover her own face and body to look like she was dead. So it's definitely a traumatic experience for a young 11-year-old to be having to hide in blood to survive. But that is what has happened following this shooting. Shooting by Salvador Ramos. And there is so much mischaracterization of this guy in the media that even with my sore throat, I hope that I will be able to bring some level of clarity. All right. By the way, if you would like to support the show, you can join the Patreon or the Subscribestar. We will soon have our private hangout around the 10th. I've not scheduled it yet, but for all the $20 subscribers, we will be having our private hangout at the beginning of next month. If you would like to send super chats, use the Odyssey feature. The dollar button is right below the regular chat, and it's the right way to support the show. Alternatively, you can also use Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below. There has been memes going around about the response of the police to this shooting. Tired of people acting like Texas law enforcement didn't spring into action to save those children. They armored up and brought up the MRAP and went in there ready for battle. Oh wait, this was what they did to a bar that tried to serve some beer during COVID lockdowns. It's true that there is a scary contrast between the urgency with which the police follows COVID orders that are not even enacted it into law, whereas clearly here some people were in danger, some people were could have been shot after the police arrived during this 40 minute to an hour period during which the police basically treated this guy as barricaded in the classroom. So, Uvalde timeline of event, police response minute by minute. So what's happening is that during this day, there is this guy, Salvador Ramos, who drives his truck apparently into some ditch. We don't know if it was an accident or if it was him abandoning the truck, knowing that he was going to commit a shooting. But whether it's an accident or whether it was intentional, drives the truck in a ditch, gets out of his truck, and starts shooting in a indiscriminate way toward people. So he first shot toward people who apparently were at a funeral, and they ran away from him, and he wasn't successful at attaining them. So they ran away, shot at the school apparently randomly toward the building. So that's the first act that tells me, despite the high kill count of this guy, this guy is relatively disorganized. And although if you compare by efficiency and kill count, he was a killing machine in a way, I still judge that he is about 105 IQ. So he is pretty much at the average, perhaps a little smarter than the average, but he's definitely not the kind of guy who would leave a full manifesto. He's not a guy who has written much, and seeing his social media interactions, they're always very small sentences with abbreviations and incomplete words. He was not a talker, and he was not a thinker. So we're talking about a totally different case from Peyton Gendron, who we've also had news about him because we have learned that he was in a Discord chat apparently with a retired intelligence official. So when they say they're retired, I don't know, maybe they're working in contract with, they're still working contractually, or maybe they're just doing it for fun. But apparently he was being groomed by an intelligence official in the US. And he was also counseled by some other guy on that Discord chat on what to write and how to write his full manifesto. So those are the news on the side of Peyton Gendron. But Peyton Gendron clearly was writing a much more complex, he had a higher intelligence than the average. Salvador Ramos doesn't seem to have a higher intelligence than the average, or just slightly higher. It seems that this guy was just a psychopath, the kind of personality that leads to mass killings or serial killings. And it seems that he was mostly motivated not by political constructs, as some article claims. We will review these articles and how wrong they are in perceiving him as a incel shooter or misogynist or racist shooter. That was not what happened. Salvador Ramos was slightly narcissistic, had delusions of grandeur about himself and his power, treated others as objects to pursue his ends, and threatened them with rape or killing as a tool to manipulate them and to intimidate them. And he was glorifying himself in the social media interactions that I've seen. He was glorifying himself and his strength and his ability to kill, and which had led a group of chats of chatters that were in relation with him at some point to call him the school shooter, in the sense of the guy who's going to do a school shooting eventually. That's interesting. That's an interesting detail, that it was so obvious with him that he would acquire this nickname, the school shooter, while having shot no school yet. So Salvador Ramos exits his pickup truck, starts shooting people, the school. and he gets into the school through a door that normally should be locked, but they say that sometimes during the lunch period or whatever, they unlock it. And so there's some amount of luck here. Either he was aware that the door would be opened at that moment because it was around noon. It was around dinner time, a little bit before noon, I believe, that he enters the school. So that's a lunch time, and that's a time at which the school doesn't lock this door, or it's partially locked. It depends on who's passing and who needs it unlocked. So first security flaw here, a failure by the school to understand that if there's a good reason to lock that door at 10 a.m., there's a good reason to lock it at 11:30 also, and at noon also. So perhaps this is something that can be reviewed on the side of school safety. You know, people lock their homes, and people spend their lives in their homes with their children, and it's a good practice to lock your home, even if you're inside, because you don't know who's coming, you don't know who would want to do torts toward your family. So perhaps the school environment should be treated equally with equal levels of security as we would treat our own house. So in any case, Salvador Ramos enters the school, and after some interactions, perhaps, and it's not clear there just how many staff members or teachers he crosses, but he quickly ends up in a double-sided classroom. Those are two classrooms combined and somehow accessible one to the other from a door or from some hall. And so he enters that double classroom, and it seems to be in that double classroom that he will make all of his victims. So in that double classroom are located at least two teachers. The two teachers have died, and many children, which will result in a death count of, I believe, 19 children dead, two teachers dead, and the shooter dead. As far as the timeline goes, it seems that it's during this period, after he entered the classroom, there's lots of shooting, hundreds of rounds being shot. He shoots all of the children that he can see, as far as I can tell. And then there is a waiting period of 40 minutes before the officer will consider getting inside and stopping him. The excuse that they are giving is that they needed a SWAT shield to enter. And apparently that's what they waited for to enter, and they used it, because Salvador Ramos was inside a closet and hiding with the goal of getting out of the closet to shoot the policemen as they entered the classroom. It seems that he was unsuccessful with any shot there, probably because of the SWAT shield. It's a large shield that covers the entire body as the policeman can advance toward the shooter. Now, during those 40 minutes, it's not like nothing happened. First, there were salvos of shootings, and we don't know at that moment if those were shootings of children that were not fully killed before or that he hadn't seen before in the classroom. There's the possibility that a teacher would have been shot at a later time point during these 40 minutes. There's also the possibility, at least there's a serious possibility, that a child, misguided by police order, would have, instead of remaining hidden, would have exited and died because during this 40 minutes, although this is not confirmed. This is what parents are worried about. Combined also with the attitude of the policemen during this 40 minute outside of the school, who were blocking parents, stopping parents from getting in the school, which I understand both the frustration and the need control crowds. You know, you cannot handle a shooter situation with 100 parents just piling toward him. I mean, that's what a shooter would want, in a way. So I understand the need for the police to manage the crowd, but at the same time, you must consider the disgusting thing going on here, where agents of the state who are apparently not competent enough to stop a shooting stop you from using your self-defense rights to protect your own children. And there was this dramatic aspect where a father was saying, I want to go in, I want to go save my daughter. And his daughter did get killed. And the police wouldn't let him in. Now, normally, if you neutralize the private citizen's ability to defend themselves, you must offer a superior defense option. You must be better than the citizen that you're taking the place of. And what's worrying here is that it's not clear that the police did perfect work here. In fact, they seem to have done perhaps terrible work, although I'm not sure yet fully. Greg Abbott, the Texas governor, has been complaining that he was deceived by his own police forces, told bad information, and that he was reassuring everyone on the first day, but that he eventually realized that perhaps significant issues have been done in the way the police responded. So that is Salvador Ramos on a chat website of some kind. And this is an article that gets the psychology of Salvador Ramos completely wrong. Spewing hate, incel Texas school shooter Salvador Ramos, chilling live streams reveal disturbing threats to girls. The article suggests that somehow this guy had a misogyny, incel type of problem, and a racist problem. And this is done in parallel to other shootings that were genuinely ideological shootings. But I suspect, based on the analysis of the behavior, that Salvador Ramos is not ideological. Because look at the basis on which they say that he's a racist or sexist. And by the way, I often do my warning when I talk about school shootings. This show is not a show that supports violence. We are a show interested in the psychology at the root of violence and evil actions. And so today what I do is I review to understand the thinking of the shooter. What I don't present is beliefs as valid. It's not to promote them. It's to understand what leads someone to commit a shooting. And lately we've seen genuine incel shooters. We've seen genuine white supremacy shooter, in the sense of people who were worried about the great replacement. But in this case, the basis for saying that this guy would be ideological goes as follows. In messages shared with the Sun, he told one teen who had rejected him, "You're going to regret not doing what I say." Then in another, he said, "Go jump off a bridge." To me, this is just a response to rejection that is part of internet culture. You often read these things. You often read these things on the internet: "Go jump off a bridge," "Go shoot yourself," and it doesn't illustrate. I mean, it does illustrate that this guy was handling rejection and handling it aggressively. So that's the first thing we get to know. The female Yubo user told the Sun he would tell people to lock their doors, don't show up to school tomorrow. Just classic shit that creeps on the internet. I never knew it would manifest into this. The threats were mostly toward women in response to them rejecting him. So one one moment. One common observation of almost all shooters of that type, and I'm not talking about the shooter who wants to rob a bank or something, but I'm talking about those shooters that come with the intent of terrorizing or killing as many as people as they can. They have different ideological source to their beliefs and why they do this, but there is a common thread, which is they don't see much hope in the future. They are faced with a lack of opportunity. And sometimes it's in the dating domain, sometimes it's demographic, sometimes it's economic, but they tend to be black-pilled. They tend to be black-pilled, and this guy may have been black-pilled from his experience with women rejecting him. He would threaten to rape girls. He would always say he had the power to make us go missing. It was honestly just typical stuff you hear on apps like Yubo and Discord, just creeps you have to ignore. His behavior mirrors that of men with incel beliefs, a warped online subculture that promotes the misogynistic idea that men are entitled to have sex with women. I wouldn't say that he had a sophisticated incel conception of the world. Based on what I'm seeing, he felt entitled, he felt a desire to control what others would do and to be interested in him, which may share a parallel with incels, but the incel community has some very specific flags about what they believe. They normally have extremely fine constructs about why women, what is the dating dynamics between women and men, why the dating sphere is so much suffering. I haven't seen anything from this. What I see is just a guy frustrated, and because he's a psychopath, using quick threats to intimidate and to kind of make a demonstration of force and intimidation. So I think the link to the incel community is extremely weak. He was definitely black-pilled and had suffered rejection, but that doesn't make you an ideological incel. Most importantly, I don't expect an incel to say stuff of the kind that he's then said, because he then went on to say that he wanted to be a known shooter with a great degree of respect. Like, he wanted to be a star of the shooter world. He wanted to be one of the most successful shooters because he was watching these Netflix documentaries about shooters and serial killers, and he wanted to attain that level of fame. He said this to someone on a chat. So to me, that is not an incel ideological motivation. To me, it was a narcissistic psychopath who wanted to impose the maximal suffering to society to attain fame. And one thing should be noted about this, he targeted children. He targeted children that were kind of in the most hopeful part of their lives. 11 years old, you know, it's you have developed a personality, you can see yourself in the future, and it's a moment at which it's the probably one of the most heartbreaking to lose a child because it's someone that you've gotten to know and that you are totally attached to. So I think that he was looking for maximal suffering here to communities and parents and to society to be further remembered. Thomas says, JF, do you think these shootings are military / secret service psyops? I don't think so. I don't think so. I think you have a certain interest in the intelligence community, and you have certain amounts of funding to try to detect these things. And in the act of detection, our governments may be so incompetent, perhaps as to have caused some of those. But I believe it's fundamentally accidental if they do so. I believe that most of the time what you have is the domain of behavioral prediction and knowing exactly when someone who's likely to be a shooter, the science of trying to pick the one out of 100 that will actually do it and when he's going to do it is almost impossible. Because who knows, this guy apparently had a plan to make the shooting a month ago because he said to some of his friends, wait in 10 days, something's going to happen. And that was like a month ago. So the behavioral factors that eventually lead to the shooting happening can be extremely random, extremely unpredictable. Now, within that mess, that kind of chaos of unpredictability, there are personal relations that even an FBI agent will not be able to assess. For example, in the case of Salvador Ramos, apparently, the moment he chose to start his shooting is after his grandmother was with some problem with his phone. And she was on the line with AT&T. And he sent a message to a German girlfriend of his. Now, I don't say girlfriend in the sense that it was romantic, but I find it extremely interesting that for someone who's called an incel shooter in The Sun, he was in active contact enough with a German girl to whom he said, "My grandma is on the phone with AT&T with phone problems. It's pissing me off," or something like this. "So I'm gonna shoot her. I just shot her. Now I'm going to go shoot an elementary school." Those are the words that were received by his German girl friend before the shooting began. And he did shot his grandmother in the face. She has been in critical condition, I believe, for a while now, but I don't know that she is dead. So can you imagine the precision here of the moment? Now, what was the problem with AT&T? Was it a kind of problem that would lead Salvador Ramos to start being worried that he may have been identified by the FBI? Because one way to precipitate a shooter into action is to lead him to believe that he's about to get caught. Because when you're caught, then you don't have access to your weapon, there's red flag laws, and they take it from you, and then you cannot be a shooter anymore. So I think that one thing that is not clear yet to me in this story, which may reveal the key to why it happened then, is what was the discussion with AT&T on the phone? And was it leading Ramos to believe that he may have had limited time before he can commit a shooting and that the perhaps his grandmother being too talkative to AT&T, or perhaps AT&T leading him to believe that they had some information about misuse of the phone for illegal purposes? Any of this could have led Ramos to decide to take action immediately. So we have to be careful in, a lot of the Democrats want to go for more gun control. First, Ramos had nothing in his background. So even if you had the most severe background check ever, Ramos would qualify as a law-abiding good citizen deserving of weapons. So basically, if you want to avoid this kind of shooting, you would have to basically abolish the right to have firearms at all. Because, and Elon Musk also has been coming out and saying, we need to have a special permit for assault rifles. A special permit here would have been obtained by Ramos, because Ramos didn't have a history recorded with the government about crimes or anything. Now, his friends on the chat app knew a lot of things about him and were calling him a school shooter. But is that a good ground to remove someone's Second Amendment rights? Because if you start doing this, what you're going to have is you're going to have mobs of young people bullying someone. They're going to say, oh, we don't like this guy. Let's call him the school shooter. Let's say to the police that he wanted to shoot us, and it's going to lead him to be disarmed. So you don't want to leave a system of too much oppression that comes to be exploitable for furthering the very oppression that sometimes these shooters are complaining of. The more you oppress, the more likely you are creating discontent and an urge to act now in the shooter. Go away, says Jeff. What about raising the legal age to purchase guns to age 21? Well, you're going to have 21-year-old shooters. Like, please understand this. We've seen a couple of them now. Peyton Gendron, this guy. They can prepare for months. They can prepare for years if you really need them to. So you're going to turn it to 21. They're going to become 21-year-old shooters rather than 18-year-old shooters. The teen Yubo user said Ramos, who killed his own grandmother. So here, that's where they claim he had anti-gay and racist signs to him in his hate-filled live streams. He was an extremely homophobic, transphobic, and racist individual, which of course resulted in him using slurs, and he openly admitted his homophobia multiple times. He had a video in his profile with the caption, "When the teacher doesn't let me use the bathroom," and the man in the video goes on to use degrading language against black people. That is not the sign of an extremely racist guy. That is the sign of a man who was living in the culture of the internet. And basically, what are the language degrading against black people? So basically, he was sharing a meme with the N-word or something like this. Listen, this is not even him using the slur. It was him sharing some content with the slur. Of course, he was probably an edgy guy, because psychopaths, they like to pull the strings on other people and cause them to react in certain ways. And one way to do this is to have a distinguished internet culture that you know is shocking to others, and to kind of annoy the normies with it. That's exactly what a psychopath would do, and that's what Salvador Ramos would do. So other signs that we have from the chat apps and the social media, he was not very talkative. He had some messages like, "I'm stuck on the hold ed side of Yubo Nar Darn." What did that mean? I don't know. Some technical thing in relation to his chat app. Firestarter says, "A homophobe who takes photos of himself in a dress." This is misinformation that's been circulating on 4chan and other boards. It is not true that Salvador Ramos took pictures of himself in a dress. What they did is they took a lookalike, but actually the lookalike has come forward, who is an actual trans person, who has said, I feel uncomfortable having to correct people on this, but this is not Salvador Ramos, this is me. and the person proved through his Twitter account that he had posted this very picture. So fake news, fake news. He had a couple of pictures of guns that he had shared on his media, guns that he had purchased. But certainly not a, he doesn't have a deep knowledge of arms like a Peyton Gendron attained. He really took some weapons and seek to make maximal damage. So what I retain from the analysis of his social media is one moment. So he is a narcissistic psychopath who wanted some degree of fame, who was getting pleasure out of triggering people and out of provoking people, like many psychopaths do. And that's it. He's just a one of these dark personalities that want to hurt people. Now, what is the cause of this behavior? Let me tell you this. In terms of his of the analysis of the structure of his family, I see many red flags there. The way this family speaks about this is extremely bizarre, and the way they speak about how much they cared for him is absolutely worrying. First, the first thing I note is the father is not in the picture, and this is a Hispanic family in which the father is just not there. And you know, many people assume, oh, the father abandoned him or something, or it was a careless father. I think we should consider the fact that if nothing is said about this father, there's the possibility that this father was rejected from the family life by the behavior of his mother. So that's a first red flag. Single mom, mostly taking care of him, but she's not even taking care of him. She dumped him to the grandparents on the mother's side. So Salvador Ramos was living with his grandparents on the mother's side. And the basis for this lifestyle arrangement, of course, we don't know why the father is out of the picture. Could be that the woman is abusive, kicked him. Could be that she has used family courts. I don't know. We may never know. Because, of course, you're not going to get this information from the female side of the family, and that's all we have in terms of public speaking. The reason he has been given to his grandparents is that he was initiating too much conflicts with his mother. Now, it can happen, a boy who is totally like problematic and who really is, his mother would have been of no help to him. But I can't help but think that there's a possibility that these conflicts, these so-called conflicts, was not merely him being evil, and that it may have had a component of her being evil to him, or being too something, maybe too controlling, maybe too not enough controlling, not enough loving. There has been perhaps something that has missed here. And it may not have happened for the last few years. Perhaps what's missing on the side of the mother was care and love and presence in the early life of Salvador Ramos. So we don't know these details, but it looks like there's something bizarre with a mother deciding, I'm going to bring my child who has problems, who has psychological issues, I'm going to delegate my parenting job to my own parents, who are grandparents and who are in cognitive aging, who are probably unable to take care significantly of, especially of someone who has psychological issues. So there's a careless act already there. there's a red flag on the father. And then we get to talk to the grandmother, and the grandmother is saying that she's asking the mother says she is asking forgiveness to the family, to the families of those people shot, but that she has also lost a child in this thing. Okay, that's kind of a bizarre phrasing, maybe some carelessness here. Like, when your child causes a violent act against others, you want to exclusively, you don't want to bring it to yourself as being a victim too. Although it's true, you don't want to do this publicly. But anyways, they're Hispanic, maybe they don't fully master the English language and being careful with how they say stuff. But then we get to speak to the grandfather, and that's where I see a big red flag, because he was the one in charge of, he was the only male model in the life of Salvador Ramos, and he doesn't seem there either. What he reports is, I don't know how he could end up doing a shooting, because my wife is taking good care of him, making him all of his sandwiches, and driving him to the fast food where he works sometimes at night. And this is a this is a very minimal definition of what a young man needs in terms of education and care. Like, to think, how can he commit a shooting, given that we've been making sandwiches for him and we've been bringing him to his job. It shows you that in this family, the conception of care is extremely limited. There was no mention of a loving relationship, of a learning relationship, of a modeling relationship. Basically, the grandparents were doing the best they could, and the best they could wasn't much. They were not inspiring to this boy, and his father was not in the picture, and his mother was at too much conflicts with him for it to be operating. So basically, this boy was maintained alive via sandwiches and an absence of care of any kind. I think that this sums up to a conclusion on why he is that way. Perhaps he has genes of carelessness, given the carelessness of his own parents and his own grandparents. It may have been running in the family, but they have certainly not made the changes to their lifestyle and to their interpersonal relationships so that it would get fixed. So you have a stack here of odds against this guy becoming a normal person and absolutely favoring this guy becoming a psychopath. And so probably what happened is that he was working to buy weapons to do his shootings, and he was living a lonely life inside of himself with these delusions of grandeur about who he would become by imposing suffering on the community. So that is the story of the Uvalde shooter. Dr. Denname says, have you read Peter Turkin's 2012 essay, Canaries in a Coal Mine, about indiscriminate mass murderers? I haven't, but this sounds like a very interesting title. I do think that the shooters we are seeing are canaries in the coal mine. I do think that they are early signs of dysfunctional aspects of society, for which we will pay eventually a much higher price than a couple of shootings of a couple of children. And not that I want to minimize what has happened, but I believe people don't fully grasp the superficiality of the manifestation of a deeper phenomenon here. There is, for every shooter, how many people are desperate, but somehow they don't have yet the full kick to do the shooting? 1,000 people, maybe 10,000 people? there is a kind of boiling anger, and some of it, unfortunately, is justified. And if I could be here tonight and tell you guys, we have such an open society of acceptance and tolerance, there's no reason you would want to kill yourself and impose suffering on others. The problem is I can't make this case for this society. We live in a society of mob rejection, cancel culture, exclusion, appropriation, affirmative action. We live in a takeover of society, and a takeover from which the only person that cannot suffer from it, according to public discourse, is man, and sometimes the white man. And because we live in this society, it's hard to make a case that, because I see the shooter, any shooter, I see them as being confronted by two choices. Up to the last second where they pull the trigger, up to the last second in this guy's pickup, he could have very well decided to go back home and not do it. That could very well have happened. So I'm interested in the choice here. What is the choice, and what is the choice that these shooters are making? Not when they do their trolling on the internet and when they have these early psychopath signs to it, but when they do it that day. What could have kept them from doing it? And I'll tell you what could have kept them from doing it. A society that offers availability, understanding, possibility, opportunity, and most importantly, that respects the contractual arrangement that the family is, marriage is. If this guy could have been faced with the possibility that, hey, if I just find one girl, maybe this German girl, and I marry her, I'm going to be able to set a life for myself, accumulate property, accumulate joy and children. But we don't have this, really. Probably, especially given his family background and his father, who knows where he is. This guy probably knew that there was not this possibility for him. First, because of the early rejections on the dating scene, but also because of the legal structure of family courts and how, ultimately, he saw what happens to men because the father is not around. So men are being raised by a single mother when the mother decides to get the divorce. If we could offer a guarantee, at least that some kind of contract of marriage exists in our society and some kind of possibility of professional realization, perhaps this guy would have chosen differently. And it's certain, I've seen so much of these guys attempting the shooting and then walking back, and then coming back 2 weeks later, and then, although it didn't work. You won't convince me that it's not possible to convince this guy just the minute before they do their first shots. There always could have been a stop to it. But this stop is not them getting counseling or them getting anything of that kind. The step would have been to be in a different society, a society that doesn't reject that kind of personality from his most interpersonal relationship in his own family up to the rest of society and the dating scene in general. There is so much to change, but if this was changed, perhaps this guy could have taken his gun in his pickup truck, say, I'm not going to go into the ditch. Now, I've heard rumors that he was on antidepressant. I haven't been able to verify this in any way, confirmed by some solid source. We have to consider the possibility that, you know, antidepressants have been developed for 40 years old who are in a life crisis and who experience just a desperate moment in their life that is biochemically induced. Now, when you give these antidepressants to a 40-year-old, you end up doing a study and, oh yeah, you know what? It improves their lives. We have to be careful. We have to be careful that if you give the antidepressant to young people, it could have radically different effect, because the antidepressant may have the exact same effect for everyone, but you give it to a man who has testicles that are still working, you know, who's cognitively capable, who has basically the motivation of youth still inside of him. And we should consider the possibility, although I still don't know with this shooter whether he was on these drugs, but we should consider the possibility that the antidepressant on a 40-year-old has little chance to lead to a mass shooting, but may have a lot of chances to lead to a mass shooting in proportion with the youth. Because the youth has a different brain, they are more capable, they are more capable of organization, they have gone through less cognitive decline, less wisdom. So we have to be careful with making studies on old people and then applying the medication on all ages. Lendald Guntram says, agents of chaos taking eventually over, we are heading there. A product of low trust society practically guarantees this kind of development. Yes, and a low trust society in which there's higher rates of crime, property is less respected. It's all a society in which it becomes less and less useful evolutionarily to be good and caring and educational and creative. If you're going to be good and caring and your child has a half, has 50% chance of not reaching 18 years old, then you've invested care in something that was unlikely to succeed. So it's unfortunate, but there's this pulling by the bottom of society when you go for it, when you go for a low trust, high crime, chaotic society. I guess that those who survive are those who do not trust the system, because as we've seen in this case, the system is incapable of protecting your children. I'm still hesitant on the question of whether the police committed serious mis-evaluation, because you could construe this whole thing as, oh, they saw him in the classroom, they saw it was, they treated it as an hostage situation or a barricaded situation, not as an ongoing shooting. Perhaps there will be a case that can be made in light of all the facts when they are exposed for this. But certainly, with the school leaving the door unlocked that otherwise would be locked and being loose about when it's locked and when it's not, certainly what we see here is that your public school staff, your average public school staff, is not as dedicated to the survival of your children as you would be with your children in your home, at least as I would be. Like, I lock the doors. I have cameras around my home. I can monitor any threats coming from a given distance. It doesn't seem like it operated well in this public school environment here. And so, and this whole practice of having no guns at school or having just a single agent with the gun at school, it creates these zones of highly vulnerable people, which are exactly the perfect target for a psychopath of the kind of Salvador Ramos. So my voice being weak, I will not be continuing this show for too long still, but perhaps a quick review of the news. Trump defends gun rights, calls for security overhaul at schools nationwide after Uvalde mass shooting. You get this whole Republican versus Democrat argument that restarts every time. It's painful because I wish there was a third way instead of, well, we need more gun control. And, oh no, we don't need more gun control. We need more security. Perhaps we should review the very concept of sending concentrated amounts of children within brick walls in a locatable place. Perhaps there is a built-in feature of safety in the process of homeschooling. Why is this not being explored? Probably because the capitalist system needs those mothers to work, and so they don't want people to adopt the homeschooling lifestyle. But with all we've seen with COVID and the transition toward the virtual world, it seems that we should be there. We should be asking this. Can't we just convert to a virtual life for most of the jobs? There will always be jobs that remain physical, but could these jobs be taken by one parent and another parent has the more virtual job, and so they can stay around children? Texas governor livid after he was misled about police response in Uvalde shooting. I've already talked about this. Meanwhile, there has been a success story of a West Virginian woman who has stopped a shooting with a concealed firearm. Apparently, someone was frustrated with the crowd. Dennis Butler, 37, frustrated with a crowd that was in a graduation party, and they told him to slow down because there were people. And he returned 30 minutes later with his gun and started shooting toward a group of 30 to 40 people, and someone instantly killed him with a concealed firearm. I don't know. I was reading this and I was like, oh yeah, good news, you know, lots of lives were saved. But then I started asking myself, wait a minute, did this guy really want to shoot these people? Was he about to shoot these people? Or was he just on an intimidation spree of some kind with his gun? I don't know. But in any case, I think it's good that that there was a citizen there. And here you can see the efficiency of the private citizen. First, the private citizen is not recognizable by the shooter. So the shooter is less likely to expect the threat. Whereas if you have a guy coming in police uniform, the shooter is likely to understand that he constitutes a threat and treat him as such. So the citizen with a concealed carry gun is very well placed to intervene here. Unlike the policeman, at least in Uvalde. All right. Elon Musk says he strongly believes in Second Amendment, yet suggests special permit be required for assault rifles. This won't help because, first, you can do a shooting with a Glock. You don't need a assault rifle to a certain extent. I don't know. Although we've seen high counts of death in shootings resulting from assault rifle, I'm not sure they are technically more efficient. I'm not sure at all. It's very possible that someone who would only have access to a Glock could very well end up making a shooting with a Glock and be as deadly. Secondly, people like Ramos, they are upcoming youngsters who come from their childhood with a clean record. It's going to be very hard to detect who would become a shooter, because someone who has a tendency to go toward a shooting, becoming a shooter, is probably organized enough in their mind and probably disciplined enough that they will not have had previous criminal prosecution on their record. And if you then go on the side of psychiatry and you say, oh well, anyone who's been, oops, I'm trying to catch a fly here. If you start saying anyone who's been going into a psychiatric ward or who has been diagnosed with a psychiatric disease will not be able to have guns. well, then you're going to have people avoid getting diagnosed with psychiatric disease. So there's really no way this permit thing can work. Society of Order says Jeff might want to try mental for that voice. Well, for now, that's my best voice. Hopefully it will improve with time. One last comment. CNN has been talking to a victim of the shooting who has survived, and she didn't want to speak to men because of what happened. She only accepted to speak to female journalists. And I want to highlight this as a case of discrimination that CNN allows itself to do precisely because they are against a male. But just change male for something else and you'll see CNN would not have touched this at all. Imagine the girl had been saying, let's say that she just got the victim of a crime by a black person. And imagine she comes to CNN and says, I don't want to speak to a black journalist. I want to speak to a white journalist because I'm traumatized by the event that just happened. That would be regarded as racist and they would never print this. But look at what they're willing to print. She spoke exclusively to CNN about her horrific experience that day, but declined to speak to any men because of what happened. She said she feels comfortable only speaking to women and also did not want to go on camera. Cirillo was hit by fragments of the bullets and they are visible on her back, shoulders and the back of her head. To be clear, I'm not criticizing the girl. The girl can have any preference that she wants, and she's a victim, she's still under the shock, and so I don't care. She can be scared of men if she wants. But I question the professionalism of CNN here, because just change men for a race, and you'll realize that CNN would never state this. They would never allow even a victim of a shooting to come and say, I'm now scared of black people or Hispanic people or white people. White they might allow. White they might allow. Silver Spider sends a super chat. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Oh, my mouth is pasty because I have so much difficulty speaking with this low voice. It leads to a bizarre feeling. Silver Spider says, hey, Jeff, did you hear that the security guard in the Buffalo shooting invented a water-powered car? I was trying to have a serious conversation about society with coworkers, but that's all they were talking about. I've seen the meme. And it's true. It comes from a YouTube video of his or someone else filming him, where apparently this security guard was believing that he had installed a hydrolytic machine that powered his pickup truck. And he had it in the pickup truck. Except I believe that further inspection in the video ended up revealing that the pickup truck was not operating on this machine at all. Because you have to know that creating hydrogen from water is a net loss of energy. You have to know that you have to invest more energy in the electric form to break the bond between H2 and O than you will gain by having the hydrogen explosion. So the only circumstance in which it's energetically viable to make hydrolysis is when you don't care about losing some amount of energy, you want to transport that energy. In other words, you have your system for hydrolyzing water here, and you want hydrogen to be exploded somewhere else. In those situations, it might be energetically viable because you say, all right, I'm going to lose 20% efficiency, maybe, but at least I'm going to have my hydrogen explosion out there. But on a pickup truck, it cannot work, because on a pickup truck, a pickup is a closed system in a way, and any electric energy that you carry within the pickup truck would better serve your pickup truck if it was activating a magnet that pushes the car forward instead of passing through a hydrolytic step that then leads to hydrogen. Oh, you've lost a lot of energy right here. So yes, I've seen the video. I think it's hilarious, but you know, people were trying to give it a, people on the boards and the 4chans, they were trying to give it a feeling of like, oh, there's some link here. It's the deep state going after a brilliant inventor. I'm coughing so hard that I'm in pain in my chest. But yeah, it's a ridiculous story. This guy was just a deluded man who didn't understand the second law of thermodynamics. All right, guys, much love. I'll see if I can do a show tomorrow. Much love. Bye-bye. And join the Patreon or the Subscribe Star if you'd like to fund the show and help us survive. Bye-bye. Thank you.